Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
This is Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works, the show where we like to talk about how to be effective in the workplace and how to have a joyous life, both at home and at work. Today, we're going to be speaking with Jill Jason. She is my guest, and we are going to talk with her about her specialty, which is, well, she has several specialties, but how to become a better speaker. Jill, are you with me?
I'm here.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, for the audience, think about it. You're in front of a group with key information to share, but you need to get over your own nerves and apprehension. So, listeners, I'm sure we've all been there. I know I have. We have to step out of that nervous place, out of apprehension, and we want our topic, we want to be interesting to our audience. We want our presentation and confidence to really wow the audience. And so, Jill, you've had lots of experience with helping people, coaching them through all of this, and you're going to reveal today how we've been mistaught through the years and from children through, I'm sure, high school when we're giving presentations in school, and even as we've become adults and we're in the workplace. And you're going to show us and tell us and explain to us what we really need to do in order to become an outstanding public speaker. A little bit about you. Jill Jason is a corporate communications coach and strategist, as well as an award-winning stockbroker, award-winning playwright, director, producer, TV actor, and motivational speaker. Jill not only talks the talk, she walks the walk. Her diverse background, which spans from corporate to creative, has allowed her to create major breakthroughs in the world of public speaking and corporate communications. Wow. So tell us, Jill, has this been something you've been comfortable with all your life, or did you have to break out of a challenging period in your life where maybe you were shy, maybe nervous about speaking? Tell us how you even got on the path of helping others.
Well, they always say, right, you never know how the dots are going to connect until you look back.
Right.
And first thing I want to say is that, yes, I was shy. Shy is powerful. Shy means you're an observer, and that you can, once you take someone who's shy and I coach them, you take them by the hand and you lead them on this path, and they release a very powerful, authentic energy, which you need as a speaker. When you think about it, Johnny Carson, right? Very
yes.
shy. Very shy. And I also would like to make a distinction, because we think that introverted is someone who's shy and wants to be alone, yes?
Oh, no.
And
yes.
extroverted are people who want to be in the limelight. I'm going to tell you the correct definition is that an introvert is someone who gets their energy source from within themselves.
Right.
And an
right.
extrovert is someone who gets their energy source outside from others. Yes?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
shy is good. Shy is powerful. I had someone, I have a founding producer of two theater companies, and I'll have parents come to me and say, oh, my child's so shy.
Mm-hmm.
Shy is good. So there was this mm-hmm. one girl, she was so shy, she came and she was like tearing. She really wanted to be there and she wanted to sing. And I said, Sammy, don't worry about it. You know, you'll do it. You'll do it. Within mm-hmm. the year, she gets into the Annie National Tour. That's
wow.
how... If you take that shyness, again, if you take authenticity and observing mm-hmm. others,
mm-hmm.
communicating is all about being your authentic self.
Well, you know, this is such an important topic in the workplace, because people need to be able, anybody working and living with a family, you need to be able to communicate clearly, effectively, and, of course, it's different speaking with your family members or at a staff meeting versus having a big audience in front of you. But either way, we're trying to impart a message. We want to be heard. We want to have people listen and not fall asleep, right?
Yes.
So,
your ability to communicate is directly correlated with your
mm-hmm.
success. I mean,
yes.
there's no doubt. Yes.
And people who are uncomfortable with speaking, oftentimes, in my experience in the corporate world, really keep themselves in a comfortable position because they don't want, you know, they don't want to find themselves in the position of having an audience or having to lead a staff meeting.
Yes. And do you know why that is?
Do I know why what is?
Why they feel this way. I can tell you, like, when I first speak with someone, and I hope all of your listeners immediately begin to feel transformed with this podcast. Mm-hmm. It's not your fault. The reason why you don't want to speak in public is that chances are you're a high achiever, and you know on a subconscious or conscious level that you don't have what it takes to hit it out of the ballpark when it comes to public speaking. And indeed, that's because you've been mistaught. So I just wanted to tell you that when you learn that powerful methodology that works and you're able to master the message and master the delivery and master the room, which is your audience, whatever that audience is, you know, one person or on a podcast or in front of 500 people, then you're going to want to do it. You're going to look forward to connecting with others and connecting a powerful message.
Mm-hmm.
And positively impacting your audience.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You know, I remember as a child, I was very quiet as a child, and I would play the violin, and we had to do solos. I think I was in the fourth grade. We had to do solos, and the guy who went first, there was only two of us doing a solo. So the guy who went before me was the same age, and he could play the violin very well, but he was very nervous. So while it wasn't public speaking, it was similar, and maybe you can make some correlations, say, because he's out in the audience, he's playing, but he was so nervous. I mean, the whole violin just shook, and he shook, and my heart went out to him, and I was nervous before I went out, but after I watched him and he was in front of me, my nervousness went completely away. I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, I see what it looks like, so I don't want to look that way. And my heart went to him. I think the compassion that came out of me somehow shifted the nervousness from me completely. And so I didn't convey the nervousness, but he did. I would imagine it's the same thing with public speaking. Early on in my career, it was the same way with public speaking. I remember being quiet and shy, and somebody would go ahead of me, and they would be nervous, and they would lose their thoughts, and my heart just ached for them, and I felt compassion. And remember standing in the back behind the where I couldn't be seen behind the podium, and thinking, just sending the person love. And then when I came out, my nervousness was gone.
Okay. Well,
any thoughts you want to kind of tell me what happened there?
Again, this is going to be transformational. So first of all, why that happened with you is that instead of going into your head, you connected with him. You sent your energy out, which is exactly what you're supposed to be doing as a speaker or a performer. Okay, number two, this is one of the mistaught myths. Everybody talks about getting rid of your nervous energy. There are two kinds of nervous energy, okay? One is the negative kind of nervous energy. That's when you're not prepared, you have no idea what you're doing. Get off the stage, okay? Get off the stage. The other nervous energy that no one writes about or tells you about is the positive, powerful, electrifying performance energy. You need it to run a marathon. You need it to climb a mountain. Why is everyone telling you not to be nervous? Yes, be nervous, but have the positive, powerful performance energy, because what you do is you feel that in your center and you say, yes, I have the positive nervous energy. I'm going to shoot that out, fill the room, and connect with everyone in a captivating, charismatic way. And when people tell you as a speaker or performer, are you nervous? Don't be nervous. You can't explain that to them, but you have to say, well, I am, you know, to yourself. I have that positive, powerful performance energy that's going to make me brilliant. So there. So that's number one.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's interesting because I'm also certified in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, how the brain interprets language. And to get rid of a negative, you substitute it with a positive, but the positive has to be valid. So now I just gave an overwhelmingly valid positive for you to get rid of the negative nervous energy. It's no longer. It's a powerful force when you're feeling that adrenaline.
That's a really good way when you think of vibration and law of attraction how we bring things in. Because if we're seeing it as negative, then we're attracting more negativity, right?
Well, yes. What happens is when people tell you don't be nervous, you're at the podium and you think you're not supposed to be nervous. So what are you doing? You're going into your head. As soon as a speaker or presenter goes into their head, they're taking away their power that they need to connect with everyone in that room and really, again, propel their message in a very powerful way. So everything that we're going to go through today with the what you've been taught, the don't do's, I have substitutions for what you need to do. And that was one of them.
That's perfect. And I think I can't help but think of Carl Jung's quote, what you resist persists, because that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
What you resist is we're focused on what we're resisting, and we're going into our head to do that.
Yes. And also, the brain does not delete a negative.
Right.
So when you say, I don't want to be nervous, the first thing that pops into your mind is nervous, you know, getting back to Carl Jung, right? So you need to substitute it with an authentic, powerful vision or word. You know, I'm going to be powerful. Yes, I have this nervous energy. It's a positive kind. Yes?
That sounds good.
Yeah, it is. It's great. And again, I mean, you need that to fill a room. You do. You need that to be amazing. You know, charisma is not something people think it's something that you're born with. No, it's not. It's totally within you. But somebody has to show you. You need that coach. You need the coach because we're not, we all have our own areas of expertise, right? And we need to know who to go to. When we need the help and the guidance and the coaching.
Right. Well, why don't you today, in the short time we have with you, coach us through some of the do's
the no-nos
here?
Okay, I'd love to.
Well,
you know one already.
Because you're working with people one-on-one all the time, right? That's what you do. You coach
them.
Yes,
I also do corporate workshops.
Great.
And, I mean, my whole thing is it's so important. When I do a corporate workshop, I'll go around the room. You know, we sit in a circle many times, and I'll say, name three of your strengths. And people, you know, they're executives. They look at me like I'm speaking a foreign language.
Name what now?
They look at me like I'm speaking a foreign language. I say, name three of your strengths. They either don't feel comfortable articulating what they are, or they're not sure about the three, you know, or, you know, it's always something. And then I go around the same circle, and I say, name one of your weaknesses, and out come 5 and 10 seconds. So somehow we can talk about our weaknesses, and we feel so comfortable doing that. But we're missing the whole point and purpose as to why we're here. Because the key is know what your strengths are, and 95% of the time you should be making them stronger. And, you know, where it says at Barnes & Noble there'll be books, you know, turn your weaknesses into strengths. No, I have no sense of direction. So my brain doesn't go there. If I were to spend all my time trying to turn that into a strength, I'd be mediocre at best.
Right.
So what you need to do, take your strengths, 95% of the time, make them stronger, and then bring your weaknesses up to par. So I get a navigator. I ask for directions. I get used to getting lost. One of my gifts and strengths is to see strengths in others. So that's what I do.
Wonderful.
That's what I do. And there's so much to talk about. I'll get back to the don'ts and the do's. But when I work with someone, be it one-on-one or in a group workshop, we have been educated above our shoulders to the left logical side of our brain, a little bit to the creative. But we have forgotten and have neglected our power center, which is our core, our heart, our gut, our instincts. Mm-hmm. And whenever I work with anyone or a group, I bring them immediately to being able to zero in on their power center and embrace that, because the triad, the powerful triad, is your power center, the left side and the right side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part, I'm telling you, you know, my background has allowed me to create really a breakthrough methodology that works in a big way.
And, well, good. I would like you to share, you know, as we go forward, share some of that so we have some takeaway points today, too.
Yes.
But did you tell us why, did you say, I don't think you did give us, the, why public speaking is still the number one fear?
Ah, well, again, one of the reasons is that everyone's been mistaught. The second reason is kind of goes along with your quote from Carl Jung. Every book and blog and everyone, that's all everyone talks about, how to get rid of your fear, how to get rid of your fear, right? Mm-hmm. But there's really, they give these gimmicks that are a desperate attempt to cover up a failing methodology. Gimmicks don't work. So they don't really give you anything to do, and it's just like they're recycling the same old over and over again. But getting back to that quote with Carl Jung, with the fear, the more you talk about it, the more you enable it, the faster it grows. So I always say, I'm not going to use that four-letter F word. There's no reason to use it. But that's why it's still the number one fear. And that's why Jerry Seinfeld, you know his quote, he said, you mean to tell me if you're at a funeral, you'd rather be in the casket than give the eulogy? Unfortunately, yes. So we've got to let, like, fear of flying or spiders or death or something go up on that podium and take the place of public speaking. And it's really my mission to revolutionize the world of public speaking and just, you know, have everyone say, wow, I can do this. I can be a great speaker. All right, so getting back to the nose.
Yes.
One of the first things, if you remember reading in a textbook or if you've been coached, they say break your speech up into three parts. Tell them what you're going to tell them for the introduction. Then tell them, right, for the body. And mm-hmm. then tell them what you've already told them for the summary.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's really known. I'm sure your audience has heard of that or has been taught that before.
Mm-hmm.
I say, really? You're watching a movie, you're reading a book, you want to be told what's going to happen, then you want to read or see what's happening, and then you want to be told what you already just saw or read has just happened? No. So why should it be any different when you're giving a speech or presentation? I don't care if you're talking about how to sequence a genome. I don't care if you're talking about the best chocolate cake recipe. You have to take them
Good
on a
point.
Compelling, captivating journey. And there are ways to do that. There are ways to master the message. So that's number one. And I go through that, and I'm writing a book now, too. But I go through all of this with my coaching. I take everyone from the beginning all the way, you know, throughout the whole entire process, because I really want to empower them. I want for them to know how to do this for themselves.
Great.
I was, one of my clients, who I've been working with for over 10 years, is one of Fortune Magazine's 100 most powerful leaders in the world. Actually, I think it was 50 most powerful leaders in the world. And I came to her over 10 years ago, and she told me her story, and it was riveting. It was amazing. And then she said, okay, this is a speech I want you to coach me on. And I looked at it, and I said, did you write this? And she said, no, a speechwriter wrote it. And I said, well, the speechwriter is not capturing the heart or the essence or the power of your story. I will get rid of the speechwriter. I will take you through the whole process and help you master that message and master the delivery. And that's it, you know,
Great.
Done. We've been working together because everyone Wikipedia's it. It's flat, right? It's flat. It's got to be compelling. So, okay, the second don't. Now, I'm just going to ask you, when you think of how many, how much energy to put into the delivery versus the message, just a percentage-wise, how much energy do you put into the message versus the delivery? What percentage would you give it?
What percentage would I give the delivery versus the message?
Yes. Like, how would you divide that 100% up?
I'd say the delivery, 75%, the message, 25%.
Okay, and that's what we've been taught. Some people say 50-50. I've had people who say 90% delivery. I am going to tell you, it's 90% message, 10% delivery.
Wow.
Because I know, because once that message is written for you with the cadence and the rhythms and the connectivity for the visuals, the auditories, the kinesthetics, once you know how to build that message, and this is what I do, then it's easy. It's easy to direct.
It actually takes the pressure off, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, because you know that your message is so captivating and so compelling that you can't wait. And then the delivery is easy because I'm on there, you know, on the stage or wherever they are, and I teach them how to master the mechanics. And because there's a way to use a presidential teleprompter, there's a way to use a confidence monitor that people don't know. And so there's so much. And as you see, people are always so surprised when I talk to them about this, because
we have to do it. We're going to have to take a segment break, but this is fascinating.
Aww.
We're going to take a quick break. We are talking with Jill Jason today. She's helping us and guiding us and coaching us through becoming an excellent public speaker. Thank you, Jill. We'll be back in just a moment.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works, produced by HealthyLife.net. And today we are really learning and being coached on how to become a better speaker. Jill Jason is with us, and she is a wealth of information. Jill, I'm so happy, really, to be speaking and talking and interviewing you today. And this is fascinating information. I would like you to give us some more mythbusters on the whole public speaking. Help us, guide us to the truth.
I know. Isn't it wonderful? Because it's such a relief for everyone to know, wow, it isn't me. I've been mistaught. And if I just learn how to do this
right,
then I can be amazing.
Right.
So it opens up a whole new world.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the next one is there, if you go onto websites of corporate, you know, coaches and companies, you'll see that they'll suggest things like look in the mirror when you're practicing, or, you know, we take you into a special room and we'll videotape you. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Again, you see yourself on a videotape, you look at yourself in the mirror, what are you doing? You're saying, oh, I don't like my smile. I don't like how I do this. So what happens when you're on that podium? You're going into your head again, as opposed to doing the one thing you need to do, which is connect with everyone in that audience. So actually videotaping and looking at yourself in the mirror is once again taking away your power.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it.
That makes sense. I remember that would make me nervous to be looking in the mirror practicing something. I couldn't do it. It just made me too nervous.
Of course. Understandably so. You knew that. At least you knew that and you didn't do it. What happens is that people say to themselves, okay, they're telling me to do this. I have to do it. Even though I feel uncomfortable, this is what is going to lead me to be a great speaker. And unfortunately, no, it's going to weaken you.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to weaken you, and it's going to want to make you run off of the stage.
Right.
And we don't want that to happen.
No.
Okay.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. As a matter of fact, I want everyone to win big at public speaking. And
great.
I've transformed so many people, so many really cool stories. And we can go into that if you're interested at all. Okay, the next one.
Well, let me ask you this. Instead of practicing looking in front of the mirror or videotaping, what do you recommend people do? Practice in a room or?
Yes, practice anywhere where you're comfortable. And you have to practice out loud. You have to. The words have energy. In order to own the words, you need to say them out loud.
Okay.
You can practice in your car. It doesn't matter, you know, where you practice. Find a place where you're comfortable.
Right.
Also, I tell people when they're talking about what they're going to be wearing, I tell them to rehearse in it at home. They need to know if those shoes are comfortable. Also, colors have energy. They need to know if it feels right. And again, that's going to your center. Are you feeling more powerful when you are wearing those clothes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a man might say, wow, you know, I'm glad you told me to do that because the neck was a little tight. You know, you have to.
Right.
You have to be aware of all of these things. And, again, as a coach, I've got you covered. So,
mm-hmm.
And it is my background in theater and directing and writing
right.
that has allowed me also, you know, being a stopper. I was on Wall Street in my 20s, had never taken a business course before, and became an award-winning stockbroker. I opened up the most accounts throughout the country with hundreds of brokers who began that year with me at Lehman Brothers, and it was a $10,000 minimal opening. And people were saying, how did you do that? I was self-taught in terms of picking up the Wall Street Journal and New York Times. But again, it has to do with knowing how to connect authentically and tell a compelling story, an interesting story, you know.
Right.
So it really, it's unbelievable. Okay, the next thing, I call it power pointless.
Power pointless?
Yeah, people do not use PowerPoint correctly.
Right.
And anything you do with your presentation or speech, it needs to continue to lift it and strengthen it. So when people write all of these facts on PowerPoint, you know, when you think about it, when do you see lightning first or do you hear thunder? You see the lightning. So what's going to happen is your eye is going to read everything and tune out the speaker. And
yes.
totally, again, anticlimactic.
Right.
So PowerPoint should be a visual image that can propel your message. PowerPoint
mm-hmm.
should be one line, you know, at a time then, coming across the screen and building with you, because you're supposed to have the power. So,
mm-hmm. yes.
Yes, and we give our power up to PowerPoint because we're afraid and we don't know what to do, and there are certain things to do with that. There was a public speaking coach, and I read what this person said. You're just gonna say, oh my goodness. The person said, give handouts to everyone in the audience, because then they'll be reading the handout and the focus won't be on you.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
This was written. Unbelievable.
Where was this said?
On Google, it was one of the, I get all of these Google, you know, items about public speaking. So it was an article written for one of the magazines.
Oh, wow.
You know, and every time I read these articles, it just reinforces what I do, because
right.
I just keep seeing the same old, same old. And when you think of it, in the last century, right, we landed a man on the moon, we can sequence a genome, we can surf the web in seconds, but somehow public speaking's made no progress. Why is mm-hmm. it? Because everyone's doing the same old, same old.
So let's talk about this a minute. Is there a difference, would you say, at least I would think there'd be a difference. As a motivational speaker, you might not even use PowerPoint, but let's say you were using PowerPoint. I would see where it would be extremely brief. If I'm attending a conference for continuing education credits and I need to have, let's say the whole topic is on data analysis of mental health today versus mental health a year ago, or
yeah.
the opioid crisis. So in that presentation, a speaker might give, which the conference I just went to, they gave a lot more data in the PowerPoint, but it was a lot of data,
a lot
of information to absorb. So we have to take a quick segment break, but
okay.
I do want to come back to
this
because I'm wondering what your thoughts are in terms
okay.
of the type of speech, the type of talk
yes.
you're giving, and how you might use PowerPoint.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment. We're speaking with Jill Jason on how to become a great public speaker.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw. We're speaking with Jill Jason today on how to become a fabulous public speaker. And Jill, we were talking right before the break about PowerPoint presentations, or what you call PowerPointless presentations, which I love. But I did bring up the question, and you didn't have time to address it. So now I'd like you to address the different kinds of presentations and how we might use PowerPoint differently, and how we might, just have a different style, of course, for maybe an educational talk versus a motivational talk.
Okay. Well, it depends upon your audience and what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
So if, as you said, you were there, it was continuing ed, if the PowerPoint is supposed to be like a textbook that people don't have to open up, if it's being taught that way, if everyone's the same in the audience, I guess that's fine. If it's just intended for you to be writing things down, if that was the intention.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, when scientists speak to scientists, right, if they're trying to show the newest, genome or the DNA, whatever, and it's kind of like a textbook.
A bit like one, although the speaker was excellent and certainly would chime in with some stories or different pieces of information. It wasn't just looking at data or statistics, but there was a lot of information on those PowerPoints.
Well, what happened is that information it's totally anticlimactic, and the brain can't absorb it. It's very important to have an emotional underlying thread. That's what we resonate. That's what attracts us to listening and wanting to know more. And sound bites. Because if you just give the brain all of these things to read and you're repeating basically what's on that PowerPoint, you're not absorbing it.
Right.
So even from an educational standpoint, that's not what I'd be doing. As a matter of fact, when I do a corporate workshop, I don't even use a whiteboard.
Mm-hmm.
It's all interactive and it's making points. So yeah, I would say that there are ways to get that information across without having to load it up on a PowerPoint.
And maybe it could be in handouts for people to have the data that they want to refer back to.
Yes, absolutely.
The talk wasn't, it's not like he was reading the PowerPoint. It's not like he was going through every detail, but he took the specifics that was in the handout and put it in PowerPoint. And it did feel a little overwhelming. You couldn't see it really well because it was too much detail. It was charts and tables, and some of it was very helpful, and some of it felt like too much. So
right.
I agree with you. I get that, yes.
As the speaker, because people don't say, well, I'll go into the best approach because it's really, really interesting, and it applies directly to what you just said. It's really important to know your audience, and it's really important to know, I always work from the end, what is the main point that you want to get across, because everything has to lift to that main point and support it. So when you said that there were things on the PowerPoint that he didn't even bring up, that could have just stayed in the handout.
Right.
So if the speaker I don't know what the main thrust of that presentation was, but if everything he said, whether it was an anecdote or a soundbite, or a photo of something, you get it across that way, it stays. It stays with everyone in the audience. Not only that, they're so interested. They feel that they can digest it,
Right, right. Stories. I love when people tell stories, because that stays with me. I remember the stories.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that's very important. All of those things are very important. And then there are all of these other ways to really master your message, which I can go through. What I wanted to make sure is that we get in something that I created called the Best Approach. And BEST is an acronym. So this can be used to attain any goal, but I'm using it in the context of public speaking, presenting, communicating.
Yeah, tell us about it. Now
So the B is twofold. B is belief, in yourself, but also belief that you are the one to voice this best, that you are the one to deliver this message. Both have to be present. Okay. The E, and you need the B-E-S and T, otherwise it's, you're not going to be powerful. You're not going to really win at this. The E is the effort, right? You have to be researched. You have to be rehearsed. All of the effort and everything in between. And the E is also the energy. And I talked about that earlier with the positive, powerful, nervous energy, knowing how powerful that dynamic is and knowing what to do with it.
Right.
Okay?
Interesting.
The S, which I've talked about, are your strengths. If I'm not good at telling a joke, I'm not going to tell a joke.
Right.
I'm not going to waste all my time trying to tell the joke. Right? So what are my strengths? Those strengths have to be woven in throughout. And that's so powerful when you have that powerful message and your strengths are integrated throughout. Yes?
Sounds good.
And then the T is what most corporations and individuals are lacking. And when you don't have the T in place, your belief starts to diminish, your effort and energy start to diminish, and you start questioning your strengths. So the T, the tactics and the strategy. And I have a template.
Tactics and strategy.
Excuse me?
You said tactic and strategy?
Yes, the overall strategy
mm-hmm.
and the tactics that lead to the strategy.
Okay.
That activate the strategy. So in terms of the strategy, I have a template. And this has to do with going back to you saying that you were in the audience, you know, at this continuing ed. I don't remember in what you
right,
said.
Right, right. Mental health,
but,
opioid addiction,
health. Okay,
things
health,
like that.
Right,
data.
Right.
Yes.
So the question is, where are you speaking? Who are you speaking to? What time mm-hmm. of day is it? What are you trying to get across? I was at a biotech conference. I was asked to critique speakers in New York City a few weeks ago. And it's, again, they were speaking to venture capitalists. They were looking for investors. You can't speak with them and connect with them the same way you would connect with scientists.
Right?
Right? So no strategy. And then you wonder, why are people not approaching me? It's because you don't have the strategy and the tactics in place to get to the strategy. So
right.
The strategic template that I have and I share, you know, are you speaking with a confidence monitor? Do you have a podium? There's also, this is not the BEST. Well, it's part of the effort. There's something I created called a memory map.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
you said it's called the memory map.
It's called a memory map. Yes.
Now we have to
category.
Jill, we have to take another segment break. But how about if we take a break and we come back and you tell us about the memory map?
Perfect.
Sounds good to me. We'll be back in just a moment with Jill Jason and how to become a better speaker.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw. We're speaking with Jill Jason today, who is a corporate communications coach and strategist, as well as an award-winning stockbroker, playwright, director, producer, TV actor, and motivational speaker. That is a mouthful, Jill. A good mouthful, very positive, very, very positive with all the things you've done. I do want to take our listeners to your website, jasoncommunicationsplural.com, and that is spelled J-A-Y-S-E-N, and communications with an S at the end, .com. And then on the website, I'm sure our listeners can learn more about the coaching that you provide, the one-on-one coaching and the corporate coaching, because they may certainly want to retain you for your services.
Yes.
You have a wealth of information. Tell us, now this is our last break. You were talking about memory map. Tell us what that is.
Okay, before I forget, I just wanted to say that if any of your listeners, if they put in the subject line of the email, when they go on the website, they'll see how they can reach me. And if they say they're your listener, they will get a free consultation.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, because they're your
wonderful.
Listeners,
should...
and I know we're like-minded, like-hearted. And again, it's J-A-Y-S as in Sam, E-N. So, yes.
What do you want them to put in the subject line?
Your podcast, the name of your podcast.
Okay, that's fine.
And then I'll know, and we'll get the conversation going. I've had clients that I've solely worked with over the phone. We've never met. So it really doesn't make a difference as to where people are located.
I'm sure it doesn't.
You know? Yeah.
That sounds good. Well, they could just put my name in the subject line.
Absolutely.
Margaret
your name, whatever you'd like to tell them.
That sounds good.
If they just say Margaret, I'll know.
Perfect.
Yeah, or like-minded.
So memory map. Tell us what that is.
Memory map. Okay. So I have, again, the last thing you want to do when I'm at this biotech conference, people are reading it. They're reading it. And the whole art of public speaking or performing is that you know it, but it seems extemporaneous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked with CEOs who said, okay, where do you want me to gesture now? Where do you want me to, you know, what words do you want me to emphasize? And I'm so organic that I do not want them to be mechanical. And what we have to keep in mind, and this is leading up to memory map, what we have to keep in mind is that some of the most powerful moments are in between the words. Because we think, which propels the word. And some of the most powerful moments are even when you forgot something. If you stay in that moment, it will take you somewhere. And a lot of times it takes you to a more amazing place. So the whole idea is you don't want to memorize word for word.
Right.
You want to be you. And even though I'll script you word for word, when we practice and rehearse, you do not want to be word for word. So I have people create something called a memory map. And this can be, you know, you take a piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, and you write down points. Now, everyone's looks different. Mine looks like a Candyland board game. It goes all over the place with arrows and everything because everyone's brain is different, but some people just go from the top to the bottom in columns. Okay, so it's kind of like fun. You get to go into your creativity and your inner child, and you just go from point to point.
Right.
When you rehearse, and what happens with me is that I put colors. I'll have colored pencils or magic markers. You put a color. You put an image. If you're talking about the sun, you know, you put a little sun. Whatever it is, wherever your brain goes, there's no right or wrong. And then you take that 8.5 by 11 and you condense it to an index card that you have, and you practice off of that. And because it's not word for word, but you remember it, and you're conversational, and you're powerful. Now, I've had people forget their memory map, but guess what? It's already in their minds. You don't need it.
You don't
need it. So what happens is when you rehearse, you put the memory map after you've rehearsed for a while. And again, if you're with a coach, it's easy because you put the memory map down, and then you give it without the memory map. And where you forget something or you're forgetting a transition, you go back to the memory map and you have to do something more. So maybe you have to circle it or put a different color around it or add an extra stick figure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's your it's ingrained. It's in your brain.
Right.
And if you have
Wonderful.
A coach, the coach would be writing it down in terms of where you lost your way in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the rehearsal process. But it's very, very powerful, and I've had people say, oh, my goodness, you know, I was giving this speech in front of 1,000 people, and the wind blew my index card away because they were outside. It was for a race to raise money. And he said, but I remembered the whole thing, and I'm like, I know, because you have your memory map. It was in your mind. That's why you remembered it, right? Isn't that?
I think, too, you know, when you're passionate about the subject, you may say it in a different order, you may whatever, but it will be better because you are passionate about it.
I
feel when people in the work setting have to give a talk or a speech to an audience and they're really not passionate about the subject, it makes it much more difficult. We have to wrap up the show. Can you believe it?
No,
it's
I can't
fast,
believe it.
Jill.
I have so much more to say.
I know. Well, we will have to schedule another interview. Let's
we
get your books and all the things going, all the things out there. Let me quickly take our listeners to your website again. So it's Jason, J-A-Y, S like Sam, E like Edward, N like Nancy, communications with an S at the end of communication. So jasoncommunications.com. Go to Jill's website. You can learn more about her work. You can retain her as a coach. You can find out about her book, everything she's done, which is amazing stuff here in your short lifespan, because I know you're only 20. But
yes,
anyway, at least you look like you're 20. So anyway, Jill, thank you so much for everything. And Jill, keep in touch with me, okay?
Absolutely. Same here. You're amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.